Thank you for having me. It's a good opportunity for me to be here and showcasing my progressing work. I'd highly recommend that before you take my model that is given in the portfolio for today's conference, make sure that you know what are the mistakes there. It's just a working paper, and I'm still working on it. And what I'm going to do pretty much is very simple. The idea I'm going to present here is very simple, but when you go about implementing it, it gets a little complicated. I address two issues. For one, the first issue is for the practitioners, I have one part. For the academic interest, I have another part. For practitioners, this is a very practical problem that we are going to face, any adult working person will face. And for the, and I'm going to tell you exactly in detail what it means and what it pertains to. And for the academic part, there is a thing called asset location puzzle. And I'm interested in some academic sense in that. So let me get started. I think this is the right button. Yeah, I got it right. So this is the plan for today's presentation. I'm first going to introduce and try to motivate the paper. Then I'm going to refer to a few related works to this thing. And then I'm going to talk about the model, present some numerical analysis that I played with. And at the end, I'll conclude. And then I'll expect lots of suggestions. Okay? That's the plan. Introduction and motivation. We are considering an average working adult who has access to a taxable account and a tax-deferred account. Pretty much whoever is working, they have access to this kind of accounts. A brokerage account, we can consider it a brokerage account, and a tax-deferred retirement account. Okay, now the idea is why this is so important. It is important because of the taxes, as Moshe mentioned, because if you save your money in the taxable account, brokerage account, for example, you have bonds, you get your interest payments, they get taxed, especially in the United States, at the rate of your income tax. So whenever you get a payment of interest, you get taxed. If you realize any capital gains, you are going to pay tax on that too in the regular brokerage account. But if you save or host all these assets, for example, bonds or equities in your tax-deferred account, you don't get taxed for a long time till you start withdrawing the money. So in the meantime, for example, when you are young, you have some equities in your retirement account. If you say, okay, my equity is doing very well, I want to rebalance my portfolio, you liquidate, you don't pay any taxes. So this thing makes it interesting. Now we are faced with two decisions. First one is what am I going to invest in taxes, bonds versus risky assets, equities versus bonds. And then once I know where I want to invest, now the second question comes, where I should host these assets, given these tax benefits. Okay, so as I have mentioned in here, we have taxable brokerage account and tax-deferred retirement account. We are facing this asset location, allocation problem, first risky versus risk-free asset, then asset location problem, taxable brokerage account versus TDRA, tax-deferred retirement account. Am I clear so far, what's going on? Okay. So basic questions in this literature, how should investor allocate their asset holdings both in both taxable and tax-deferred account? Then, of course, we are going to talk about tax timing option in taxable account versus pre-tax return in tax-deferred account. And what are the determinants of the optimal holdings in these two accounts? I'm going to talk about the tax timing options in a bit. Okay. When I go over this related work. First, this tax timing option came into being become well known through this work of Konstantinidis in 1983 econometrica paper. Basic idea is simple. Whenever you have equity, for example, you have IBM stock. The IBM does well. You sell it. You capitalize on your capital gains, but you have to pay the tax then, right then and there. But, for example, you bought something for $100. Now, the price is $80. So you have lost $20. You can ask for tax deduction. So if your equity is doing well, the best strategy is to let it grow. But if your equity is doing bad, sell it, get the tax deduction. That is the basic suggestion of Konstantinidis in that. That is the tax timing option. You have the option to benefit from your losses. Okay? And according to Konstantinidis, go ahead whenever your equity is doing well, let it grow. If it is doing bad, liquidate it and capitalize on this tax benefit. Damon and Spat and Zhang, I'm very privileged to have, of course, Chester Spat in here. I am expecting to get some good feedback from him on my paper. And in their paper, in the Review of Financial Studies 1996 paper, they formalize it and they show how to value this tax timing option. Very elegant paper. I would highly recommend people to look at it. Chauvin's 1999 paper is the paper where he mentions this location issue, according to my best knowledge. Okay? He says that it does matter where you host your assets. Okay? Next, coming back to again, a paper by Damon Spat and Zhang, 2003 paper. 2004 paper is forthcoming in Journal of Finance. And this is the paper I am very much related to. My paper is very much based on this paper. So I'm going to go, when I go talk about my paper, I'll be talking lots about their paper. Okay, it's a very elegant paper, but it allows you to analyze very complicated in a very simple way. Okay, according to Damon Spat and Zhang, they say that if an investor is restricted from borrowing, we may see this kind of allocation. In taxable account, taxable bonds are going to be allocated in TDRA, and I apologize, I am doing the reverse in here. First, I'm presenting the case where borrowing is allowed. If borrowing is allowed, the investor can borrow an unlimited amount. At that time, the optimal location for taxable bonds is tax deferred retirement account, TDRA, and optimal location for all the equities is the taxable account. Because why? The intuition is very simple. Simply, if you keep your taxable equities in the taxable account, you can always capitalize on the tax timing option. And by hosting the taxable bonds in tax deferred account, you don't incur the tax burden from interest payments. Okay? But they say that when you have the borrowing constraint, at that time you may not be able to do that exactly. Why? Because if you have a taste for certain kind of risk exposure, if you host all of your bonds in tax deferred account and you want to really hold lots of equities, given the size of your contribution limit and the size of the accounts, you may not be able to undo your long bond holdings in your taxable account. That's why they say that whenever we have the borrowing constraint, at that time we may observe mixed allocations. So we may have a mix of equities and bonds in that tax deferred account. Okay, but we are not going to observe simultaneously in both accounts. We're not going to observe any mix. So if we observe mix in the tax deferred account, we are not going to observe mix in the taxable account. That is their conclusion. But when we take this model to the numbers, this is there's a paper by Burgess, Stresser and Potter, but this is the 2001 paper. They have a 2002 version of it too, where they see that where they use the surveys of consumer the data from the surveys of consumer finances. I'm sorry. Thank you. Surveys of consumer finances data, where they find that people do have mixed holdings in both accounts. And some people simply prefer to have all of the equities in their tax-deferred account. And that is not conducive to the understanding of this hypothesis in here. So that is, in Damon Spat and Zhang's paper, they call it a location puzzle. And what we try to do in our paper in here, I try to see whether I can say something more about this location puzzle. Okay. Any questions on the premise of this analysis? No? Okay. Okay. In here, I solve a dynamic optimization problem for portfolio allocation. I am not going to bring up any equations or anything that, like that, because of the strict instructions. Okay, and here's the model. We are going to consider a preference of constant relative risk aversion. It's the utility function that is pretty familiar to most of the academics. Now we are going to consider an individual who starts working at age 20 and works for 50 years and leaves for another 30 years in the retirement age. And we will assume that the bequest motif, that means the per individual wants to leave 20 years worth of consumption for his descendant, his or her descendant. So each year the payment would be, of the consumption would be made through an annuity payment. Okay. And a constant fraction of the total wealth comes from the non-financial or labor income, and I set it to 15%. This is a this is an assumption, and this is a sort of a strong assumption, I would say, but I think that for this analysis it's okay. And a constant fraction of the non-financial income is contributed towards the retirement account, and that is going to be 20%. So whatever whatever amount you make as a non-financial income or labor income, you're going to contribute 20% of that for your retirement account. Okay. Investment opportunity set. You have two risky assets in here, two equities you can consider. A risk-free bond, 1 year maturity. The risky assets price follow a binomial process, and the price are independent of each other. I am going to relax this assumption in a bit, but for the base case, I'm going to keep this assumption. And I'll show you that the main kick of my paper is in allowing for different correlation structures of these risky assets. Okay? Then we have a constant fraction of each of the assets prices paid as dividends. We have it set it at 2% of the price. Tax environment, as I have talked, I have mentioned earlier, taxable accounts, dividends and interest taxes are received, and as taxed as received, capital gains and losses taxed only at sale. Investors' tax basis is reset to the market value at death, are pretty much forgiven. Pretty much, if you die, your estate goes to your son or descendant or daughter. It is set at that income level. Tax deferred account investment returns are not taxed. Withdrawal tax as ordinary income, retirement accounts wealth is taxed as ordinary income at death. Okay, this is the tax environment. Okay, let me quickly talk about few limitations of my paper in here. I use tax basis as average cost, I use the average cost tax basis in here. What I do pretty basically, if I buy some, for example, 100 stock this year, 100 stock of IBM for $100. Now next year, supposedly I know next year it is going to be $110. And I want to buy another 100 stocks of IBM. So I am going to have 200 stocks. One, the basis for this 100 was 100. Next year it will be 110. What I am going to do, I am going to take the average of this basis. Rather than maintaining the following the path of the basis, I am going to take the average of the basis for the purpose of capital gains calculations. Okay, and there's a paper by Raman Uppal where they show that the loss due to this assumption is not that high given the robustness and the magnitude of the value that I use to make my conclusions. It is quite robust to this assumption, so it should be all right. Stochastic labor income, in my model in here I have stochastic labor income, but not labor income does not follow any specific stochastic process. It is stochastic due to the fact that I am assuming that my labor income or non-financial income is a constant fraction of my total wealth. Since the stock price is varying over time, so my total wealth is varying over time, and due to that I get this stochastic nature in my labor income. But certainly it would be a very good idea to have a separate stochastic process just for the labor income. Okay? Then I kill my guy real quick. I said, I know exactly when I'm going to kill my investor. I say that, 100 years, you are dead. If you don't die, I'm going to shoot you. You are non-existent virtually. So I do take into account of stochastic death. And that would be a good thing. Why that would be a good thing? That would show us the impact of portfolio allocation of age on age, like the impact of age on portfolio allocations. Okay, but I don't capture that in my model. Of course, I have mentioned I have fixed death, right, death, And behavioral issue, why I think it is very important, I have a little bit background on experimental economics. And since morning, we have heard many practitioners think that people never behave in the most optimal ways. So I think this is a fertile ground for future research, and I don't take into account of these things in my paper. Okay? So these are parameter values. I am consider going to, the, in the base case, I consider an individual who has lots of holding of equities and the taxable account. He likes equities. And I don't have any built-in capital gains. No built-in capital gains, no built-in capital losses. I set the interest rate at 6%. I have two equities, equity one and two. The rate of return is 13% and 9% with standard deviation of 20 and 30%. Okay, and I set the risk parameter value at 3, and that is this, and taxes, ordinary income tax set at 36%, capital gains tax set at 20%. We are doing a numerical analysis, parameter changes, some value change. The question is, do we get some qualitative insight into the issue? That is the main focus in here. Yeah. Retirement wealth ratio is how much of your total wealth you have in your retirement wealth.
So,
yeah, let me give you one example. For example, how my retirement wealth ratio is 0.1. What do I mean by that? If I have total, my total wealth is $100. After some, I have done some simplification in here. I would approximately have $90 in my taxable account at the end of the year, and $10 in my tax deferred account. After, by the way, this retirement wealth ratio is a normalized ratio that I have in here. I adjusted for it for taxes. This is a transform variable that the description is given in my paper, but approximately speak, just as statistics. Right. So what are we at? No, I'm just saying this is the state where we're going to start, and now we'll see how people are going to make their decisions. Yes, that's exactly what they do. Now we want to see exactly what they do. If that is the state, yes. Thanks. So we are going to have two scenarios in here. One, in the top two panels, A and B, we have an investor who has a very small, the Y is equal to 0.1. That means this individual in here at the top has very little in his retirement account. 10% of his total wealth, approximately speaking, in retirement wealth. And my question is, overall, what is he doing? We observe that he invests 20% in bonds, and he is not allowed to borrow money at all. Okay, so he allocates 10% of his total wealth in bonds in here, as opposed to him. We come to the person individual who has 90% of his wealth, 80% of his wealth in tax deferred accounts. My question is, what is he doing? We see that this individual is holding low amount of bonds in here, less than 10%, and high amounts of equities. This individual is not holding only equities. We have a mix in here. So we can see from here that if borrowing is not allowed at that time, individuals may hold some mix if borrowing is not allowed. When retirement wealth ratio is high, if borrowing is not allowed, individual may hold mixed holdings. Okay. Have to be first. Now what we are going to do, we are going to focus on each individual account. Earlier we were looking at figures which were described over the whole wealth. Now we are going to look into taxable account and tax deferred account if the individual has average retirement wealth. Okay, so what do we see in here? In the individual with average retirement wealth, if he's not allowed to borrow, he's going to hold lots of equity in his taxable account, and he's going to hold some equity in the tax deferred account. And we can see in here that we have in this axis, we have individuals' retirement wealth ratio. In this axis, we have individuals' age. And we observe that individual with high retirement wealth ratio, they are going to host lower amount of equities in their taxable account, but they are going to host higher amount of equities in their tax deferred account. What about bonds? We observe that all kinds of individuals, irrespective of their tax deferred account, the size of the tax deferred account, they are going to host no bond in the taxable account, but they're going to host some bonds in the tax deferred account, but the bond holding is declining in the size of that retirement account. So as your retirement account size is increasing, your bond holding is decreasing. Okay. Now what we are going to do, we are going to allow the individuals to borrow up to 100% of their brokerage account. For example, your brokerage account wealth is $100. We're going to say, okay, you can borrow up to $100. And Damon Spratt and Zhang, in their paper, what they do, they say that, okay, if we allow people to borrow unlimited amount, what is the optimal solution? And now we are saying that let's do this thing. We are going to gradually allow people to borrow higher and higher level. So in order to get all equity or all in bonds in the tax deferred account, how much borrowing we need to have? And the next question is, okay, if we need 200% borrowing, is it feasible? Okay. So this is what we see for an individual with low retirement account, y equals to 1. This individual doesn't have much in the retirement account. On average, this individual is going to have 92% in equities in the taxable account, 92% in the taxable account in here, and during the working years. But there is not going to be any equities in the tax deferred account. In the later years, when he's going to retire, he's going to have higher amount of equities, but again, the bond allocation is still going to be around 10%. But things change for an individual with higher retirement account wealth, and this individual is going to host lower amount of equities in here in the taxable account, but he's going to host higher amount of equities in the tax deferred account. And we can see that this individual is going to borrow heavily also, as opposed to the first person in here, and we can see that he's going to increase his equity holding also in the later age. Now we are again back to the similar kind of graph that we looked at. We are now looking into each account. In the taxable account, equity holding is going to go up certainly because you can borrow money now. It's above 100%, but you can see that the bond holding is decreasing and everybody is borrowing. But the borrowing level is not the same for everyone. The individuals with high retirement wealth, they're borrowing heavily as opposed to individual with low retirement wealth. Okay. Now comes this correlation structure. This is the last figure that I'm going to show you in here, and then I'm going to conclude. So with the correlation structure, the most important thing is that whenever we are trying to allocate our resources in the taxable and tax deferred account, this is the key thing we should be looking at. What are the assets we have, risky assets? What assets we have access to? What are their correlation structures? In here, in the top one, we have an asset. We have assets, three different kinds of assets with correlation structure -2, independent, and with +0.2. Now the question is, given these things, do we have equities in the tax deferred account? We see that if the correlation is negative, we're going to have all inequities. If correlations is zero, at that time, we're going to have around 60% inequities. But when correlation is positive, at that time, we are going to have lower amount of equities in the tax deferred account. But when we have a situation where we have no restriction on borrowing, that means like we relax up 100%, at the time we say that it is not optimal to have any equity in the tax deferred account. This is consistent with the DESG conclusion in here. And one last thing we have is this borrowing constraint, how much it takes, how much borrowing we need to have in order to have all in equities in the tax deferred account. We see that in here for a personal individual with low retirement wealth, if we allow him to borrow up to 100%, he's going to have all in equities, all in bonds in the tax deferred account. But for an individual on the right panel, in panel B, if we were to have an individual with high retirement wealth, we will need to allow this person to borrow up to 175%, which is not necessarily feasible. So what do we conclude from these things? It's basically simply this correlation structure of the risk assets is a key determinant of asset location decision. Size of retirement account along with the level of borrowing constraint affect the location decisions. Borrowing constraints is a key determinant of location decision. There is a trade-off between diversification and tax timing. Location decisions are robust to bequest motive and retirement contribution level. With reasonable relaxation of borrowing constraint, mixed holdings of equities and bonds in TDRA is optimal. Investors are not necessarily making suboptimal decisions, which is surmised in some of the existing papers. And there may be a possible link between the optimal retirement account size and the borrowing